This is Christy, and I'm reading the Midland Reporter Telegram for Tuesday, March 28, 2023. PSP Scarborough investing $6.1 million in leadership training. The Permian Strategic Partnership and Scarborough Foundation are partnering with the Holdsworth Center to provide leadership training of public school officials, by Mella McEwen. Following through on its mandate to support education, one of its five priorities for the organization, the Permian Strategic Partnership is partnering with the Holdsworth Center to provide leadership training of public school officials across the Permian Basin. The PSP is contributing $4.6 million to the partnership, while the Scarborough Foundation is contributing $1.5 million, bringing the total investment to $6.1 million. Over the next 2 years, the goal is to strengthen the leadership skills of up to 100 principals, teachers, and district administrators, and build stronger talent development opportunities in the basin's largest school systems. This spring, Holdsworth will select the first cohort of 24 Permian Basin schools and districts to participate in its two-year campus leadership program, which helps teams of leaders strengthen their leadership muscles and learn new ways to tackle issues standing in the form of student success. In addition to the campus leadership program, three of the region's largest districts will participate in the Holdsworth Leadership Collaborative, a program designed to help district leaders build a strong bench of aspiring principals who are ready to step into school leadership positions when they arise. We believe that investing in educational leadership is fundamental for securing a prosperous future in the Permian Basin, said Tracy Bentley, President and Chief Executive Officer of the partnership, in a press release announcing the venture. The Holdsworth Center has proven to be an exceptional partner, equipping public school leaders with the tools, skills, and top-tier training we need to elevate the quality of education in our region. Our continued partnership provides a valuable opportunity to ensure all students across the Permian Basin have access to the education they need to succeed. Grant Billingsley, President and Chief Executive Officer of Scarborough Foundation, said in the press release, because teachers, principals, assistant principals, and district administrators are educational first responders who provide learning opportunities and hope for our children and families, Scarborough Foundation is proud to partner with PSP, the Holdsworth Center, and the participating districts in the important initiative. Since its founding in 2017, the Holdsworth Center has served more than 1,370 educators in 50 Texas public school districts. Despite the challenges of the last 2 years, 84% of schools in the program made significant progress towards an ambitious student impact goal. Water Roads Top County Leaders Wish, by Ben Schaefer. Midland County commissioners discussed their plans and pressing county concerns that need to be addressed during the next 5 years during the commissioners' court meeting Monday. Most of the commissioners had overlapping plans, mainly concerning the county's water source and major roads. Precinct 2 Commissioner Jeff Summers said one of his top priorities for the near future is establishing a reliable water source within the county. It would be easiest to get a county water source into southeast Midland County, but the whole county should benefit from a water source, according to Summers. Summers said he continued to push the water source issue. Additionally, the growth and development of County Road 1130 are important moving forward for Summers. As a main thoroughfare to many people in eastern Midland County, Summers called the road a huge issue that needs to be continued to be worked on. Precinct 3 Commissioner Luis Sanchez echoed Summers, saying a water source was his top priority for the county. County Judge Terry Johnson said he would be looking for and bidding for ways to facilitate a water source in the county. Midland County bought an underground water source in Winkler County, Rourke Waterfield, in 2015. Johnson also addressed law enforcement. The new jail is in the planning stages, and the county has increased some law enforcement salaries. The increased salaries for jailers have already been beneficial, as there were no jailer vacancies in the Midland County Jail. Johnson is looking forward to making progress on the Regional Juvenile Detention Facility, which is a joint project with Odessa. It would include the 17 counties that make up the Permian Basin. Johnson would like for the county commissioners to share their plans for the next 5 years or so at the end of each court meeting in the near future. What to Know About the City's Deal to Bring Bass Pro Shops to Midland by Stuart Doreen. The Midland City Council will vote Tuesday on the execution of the Midland Development Corporation's Abatement Agreement and the Master Development Agreement with C. Hodges Development Services, LP. The vote Tuesday addresses just the retail options, including the publicized arrival of a Bass Pro Shops store in the West Midland Center. Reports indicate that the plan is for a $45 million entertainment retail complex on 17,345 acres at that intersection. Midland Development Corporation approved the agreement on Monday. There are some things to know about the Tuesday's agreement. This master development agreement also includes the Entertainment Center, MDC officials said Monday. The original announcement of a partnership with the Midland Development Corporation, the City of Midland, and Hodges stated that there will be a 60,000-square-foot pad for both a national retailer and a two-story family cinema and entertainment center, complete with an outdoor music and event stage and platted lots for other general retailers and restaurants. The tax abatement reinvestment zone calls for a tax abatement for Hodges for improvements, including a building containing at least 55,000 square feet of retail and restaurant space. The estimated cost of those improvements cannot be less than $15 million. The property tax abatement is for 10 years on the 11,578-acre property located northwest of the intersection of State Highway 191 and 158. The proposed agreement includes a 100% abatement for years 1 and 2, 80% abatement for years 3 and 4, and 60% abatement for years 5 and 6, 40% abatement for years 7 and 8, and a 20% abatement for years 9 and 10, according to the agreement. There is a sales tax rebate at any time within 2 years following any phase within the property being open to the general public and obtaining a certificate of occupancy, the company shall have the right to provide written notice to the city of its election to commence the sales tax rebate as to that phase and the date of the commencement thereof. A rebate notice. The city reports any rebate term requires the city to make a rebate payment once a year back to the company and continues for 7 years. The city also includes a waiver of development fees. Those fees waived in connection with and applicable to the development of the property include permitting fees, inspection fees, utility connection fees, plan examination fees, and water and sewer tap fees. The developer will receive up to $5 million from the Midland Development Corporation for infrastructure cost. Infrastructure funding requires construction and completion of paving, drainage, water, and wastewater infrastructure. Improvements required for two streets located at the northwest corner of the intersection of State Highway 158 and State Highway 191, which shall be dedicated to the city, and B, any other infrastructure improvements serving the property that may be approved by the MDC Board of Directors in a future amendment to the agreement. The infrastructure funding cap is $5 million. The MDC will help with additional assistance. The agreement includes a paragraph that reads, MDC agrees to use reasonable efforts to assist the company in obtaining tax abatement agreements from Midland County, the Midland Community College District, and the Midland County Hospital District. Other funding sources. The Midland Development Corporation will help the company acquire available job creation credits and reimbursements from applicable authorities and favorable industrial power rates from the electric utility provider for the project and any additional development on the property. The land where the complex will reside has not been annexed at this time, officials said. Those discussions are expected to take place and will give residents and interested parties a chance to speak out. Failing schools put MISD in a bad situation. Editors note the following was written prior to the Midland ISD School Board meeting, which took place Monday evening. Midland ISD Board of Trustees members must vote Monday night to allow third future school take over Lamar Elementary. They really have no other choice. Sad, this school is Southwest Midland, has been a failing campus through the tenures of three, maybe four different superintendents and different MISD board makeups. It is like the former Crockett Elementary, Travis Elementary, and Houston Collegiate Prep, which were allowed to fail for so long that Midland ISD had no good options. In the case of Crockett Elementary, now General Franks Elementary, Midland ISD board members had to close it down, send the students elsewhere, and find new leadership to avoid a Texas Education Agency takeover. In the cases of Travis and Houston, legislative action allowed Midland ISD to partner with charter operators to create in-district charter operations to avoid a school closure or a TEA takeover. Again, Midland ISD leaders had no alternative, providing cover to a Midland ISD board that frankly doesn't deserve it when it comes to its management of long-term failing schools isn't the purpose of this article. Our community has other problems, including the way administration provided basically no notice to a community about a basically life-changing decision board members will make on Monday. Around 4:30 p.m. Friday, the district sent out a press release, a statement really about the proposal to change Lamar Elementary. It was the classic take out the trash announcement. Pulling the curtain back a little for our readers, the idea of take out the trash happens when an entity buries important news on Friday because it knows that doesn't provide much time for the media or people to ask questions. Entities know their personnel will be out of the office when calls happen, and no traditional media isn't looked at Friday night and through the weekend. By Monday, it's too late. It is meeting day. What Midland ISD did was classic, take out the trash. No other way to describe it. With Midland ISD looking for a public information officer, here's friendly advice on how this situation should have been handled. A more transparent way would have been to call a public meeting at Lamar, inviting the media about what was going to take place with the campus. Members of the administration, board, and third future would have been there to answer questions ahead of any Midland ISD board vote. Then provide a question and answer for public in the paper ahead of the weekend edition about transitions like this. Include in that article facts, figures, and answer any misconceptions about these situations. Lastly, in the weekend edition, the board president, an elected official, would make the case why the step is needed. If the district had done that, there couldn't have been any discussion about transparency, and the community would have been more educated. Win-win. As it looks now, Midlanders rightfully feel their Midland ISD board and its administration are trying to avoid telling the community bad news. We have to do better, Midland ISD. I agree with District 5 board member Brandon Hodges, who on more than one occasion has told me that Midland ISD errs over and over by not trusting the Midland community to understand its district's difficulties. He had said if Midland ISD is upfront on topics like academic achievement and discipline, a community would be more likely to back its district, its schools, its students, and its leaders. He's right. But right now, leadership appears to be more concerned about its image. Maybe it is because of the bond election coming in November. However, that would be a mistake. Right now, Midland ISD is riding a wave of approval not seen in years because of the hire of its superintendent. However, let's be clear about one thing. The district has taken actions to be less transparent with the community. If we continue on this path, it creates a scenario that Midland ISD will snatch Bond defeat from the jaws of electoral victory. A Bond should have won in 2019, but lost because of central office miscues. Not an overly flawed plan, not a three high school format. Current MISD leadership might want to remember that. Lastly, and even more importantly, let's not forget this fact. Midland ISD appears to be 0 for 4 when it comes to turning around long-term failing schools. And it is very discouraging that Midland School District is not capable of turning around a long-term failing campus. We have become too comfortable in having someone else do our heavy lifting, and that has to change. It doesn't matter that an agreement calls for Lamar to be turned back over to Midland ISD after 3 years. We need our board to say to administration that enough is enough. Midland ISD is capable of such a turnaround, and we need to hear our superintendent say this will not happen again. Even with an improved report card, this district has serious academic achievement issues. We farm out our greatest academic issues to companies like IDEA Public Schools and Third Future Schools. We have seen schools connected with other entities like IDEA, Third Future, Midland College, and Young Women's Preparatory Network are the entities responsible for some of the greatest achievements in the district. We watched our distract cease operations of its one district operated STEM Academy and turn over the land when it was politically expedient to a charter operator. Here's another truth. For all the bond talk coming from central office, there isn't a bond proposal that would have changed the fate of the students of Lamar Elementary. Maybe most disappointingly, a student starting in kindergarten when Lamar's first failing rating, according to Reporter Telegram records, took place around 2015 or 2016, is now in the 7th or 8th grade. It appears in 2019, Lamar was a D campus. That student will go into high school without knowing a year Lamar didn't live up to any reasonable expectations for academic success. Hopefully that changes Monday night. City leaders set to pay bills from January water main rupture by Stuart Doreen. The Midland City Council will take care of 3 bills from the water crisis that happened at the beginning of the year. City leaders are set to approve $926,716 in payments to companies that helped with pipeline and water purification plant issues that took place in January. Utilities Director Carl Prego told the Reporter Telegram that the City of Midland will be filing insurance claims for 2 of the payments against contractors alleged to have caused the rupture of a water main that created the crisis, which included a boil water notice. The claims will be for payments of at least $676,481. The city is set to pay Copple Construction $342,868 for service on the repair and installation of valves. Copple was called in to install new valves and replace the broken section of 30-inch main. Crago stated in an agenda item document, having to cut in the repair while water is still flowing in the pipe required a specialty construction of 2 30-inch double-line stops, increasing the cost of repair. A second payment related to the water main along State Highway 158 is set to Red Deer Construction. Red Deer assisted Copple by performing all crane operations, all excavation and trench safety, and provided standard supplies, Crago reported. Red Deer provided their services in assisting with the repair of the water main and installation of the valves. The cost for Red Deer to perform the repairs was $333,613.72. The last payment has to do with the emergency dredging of the water purification plant reservoir performed by Red Deer Construction at a cost of $250,235. This was not caused by the contractor that ruptured the pipeline, according to Crago. The reservoir is the location where the city's 1966 water source enters the treatment system, Crago reports. With the solids in the reservoir, the city could not flow water into the reservoir, causing the 1966 water source to not be able to be used. Crago stated in the agenda packet, Red Deer was mobilized to remove solids to allow the city to put the reservoir back in services. Crago told the Reporter-Telegram that the fix will allow for flexibility in the future if a similar situation happens again, as the city can move water coming from T-Bar in a different direction or rerouting water line. Indoor sports facility land lease comes before city leaders by Stuart Doreen. The nonprofit interested in building an indoor sports facility at Scarborough Sports Complex will have a land lease considered at Tuesday's Midland City Council meeting. Tuesday's Midland City Council agenda calls for execution of an option agreement between the city and Midland Athletic Syndicate regarding a lease of land at the complex. According to the city, Midland Athletic Syndicate, Inc. will pay $1,000 per month to the city during the option agreement. Midland Athletic Syndicate, Inc. will pay $1,000 per month to the city. Midland Athletic Syndicate, Inc., a nonprofit corporation, is interested in the option of leasing approximately 4 acres of land located at the northeast corner of the Scarborough Sports to build an indoor sports facility similar to the Dodge Jones Youth Sports Center in Abilene, the city reports. The option may be exercised by the corporation anytime after the date of this agreement until 5 p.m. on the first anniversary date of the agreement. As part of the option, the corporation will pay $1,000 per month to the city during the option period. The sum of these payments shall also be credited toward any future impact fees or other fees assessed by the city relating to land or construction of the improvements. The monthly option payments will cease if the corporation exercises the option. The option agreement will also terminate if the corporation fails to exercise the option before the first anniversary date of the agreement or if the corporation dissolves. The city also reports that if the option is exercised, the lease shall have the following terms. The term shall be 99 years. The corporation will pay $1 each year for rent. During the lease, the corporation can construct buildings and improvements on the land, including a multi-use sports complex, and shall be responsible for all cost of maintenance and upkeep of the land and any building and improvements. County Officials Promote Internship Program by Ben Schaefer. The Midland County Internship Program and Texas Workforce Commissioner Summer Earn and Learn Program were discussed Monday at the Midland County Commissioners Court meeting. The internship with Midland County runs from June 5th to July 20th and provides work opportunities for college students through the county government. Robert Segura, Human Resources Director for the county, says county officials have spread the word to colleges and universities throughout the state and have already received positive feedback and interest from Texas Christian University, Texas Tech University, University of Texas, Permian Basin, Texas A&M, and East Texas Baptist. Soon, Midland County will reach out to the department heads and elected officials to find the right match for this year's interns. Segura said it's a good way for students to build their resume. County Judge Terry Johnson said county has hired strong candidates directly from the internship program. In addition, Midland County commissioners approved a motion to participate in the Texas Workforce Commission Summer Earn and Learn program. The program provides work opportunities for people with special needs anywhere from ages 18 to 24 inside Midland County. Segura said the goal is to help young people with special needs develop skills applicable to the workforce. This will be the third year Midland County will participate in the program. It also runs from June 5th to July 20th. MDC approves agreement for entertainment retail complex by Mella McEwen. The fate of the proposed entertainment retail complex at State Highway 191 and State Highway 158 is now in the hands of the city council, members of the Midland Development Corporation boards of directors on Monday unanimously approved a resolution authorizing a master development agreement between the MDC, City of Midland, and C. Hodges Development Services for the multi-million dollar entertainment and retail complex. City Council will now take up the agreement and related tax abatements. C. Hodges Development Services plans a $45 million entertainment retail complex on 17,345 acres at the intersection under the Master Development Agreement. The MDC has agreed to contribute up to $5 million in infrastructure funding for roads, drainage, water, and other infrastructure. That includes two roads, an east-west extension of Sinclair Avenue, new north-south road. Once complete, all infrastructure will be dedicated to the City of Midland. Harris told the Reporter-Telegram in a telephone interview last week that Hodges will be reimbursed the $5 million once the City of Midland inspects and approves the infrastructure. Bass Pro Shop is expected to be the anchor tenant, occupying the 60,000-square-foot pad designed for a national retailer. The site plan also includes a pad for a 60,000-square-foot, two-story family cinema and entertainment center, complete with an outdoor music and event stage, and platted lots for other general retailers and restaurants. The final agreement calls for Hodges to acquire the acreage on or before May 1st of this year and begin construction on or before January 1st, 2026, with completion by January 1st, 2027. Harris noted that Hodges has a deep record of such developments, including the Canyon West Shopping Center in Lubbock. Obituaries. Bill Lively passed away peacefully in his home March 24, 2023. Bill was born October 9, 1930, to Dan and Kitty Lively in McCamey, Texas. In lieu of flowers, the family suggests donations be made to any animal shelter or charity of your choice. A graveside service will take place at 11 a.m. Thursday, March 30, 2023, at Rest Haven Memorial Park. Arrangements are under the direction of Nally Pickle and Welch Funeral Home and Crematory of Midland. Online condolences may be made at www.npwelch.com. Eddie Thomas Willman, 84, of Midland, passed away on Friday, March 24, 2023, surrounded by his family. The family will receive friends from 5 o'clock p.m. to 7 p.m. Monday, March 27, 2023, at Nally Pickle and Welch Funeral Home. Graveside services will be held at 10 a.m. Tuesday, March 28, 2023, at Fairview Cemetery. In lieu of flowers, memorial donations may be made to the Permian Basin Honor Flight or St. Jude's Children's Hospital. Arrangements are under the direction of Nally Pickle and Welch Funeral Home, Crematory of Midland. Online condolences may be made at www.npwelch.com. Kenneth R. Lawson, 92, of Champion, died at 3:32 a.m. Wednesday, March 22, 2023, at Accolade on Pell's Paxton, Illinois. There will be no public services. Morgan Memorial Savoy is in charge of arrangements. Condolences may be offered at www.morganmemorialhome.com.
Good morning, this is Kim, and I am reading the Odessa American. Today's date is Tuesday, March 28, 2023. PSP Scarborough invest $6.1 million in education. The Permian Strategic Partnership and the Scarborough Foundation announced Monday their continued commitment to supporting education in the Permian Basin by partnering with the Holdsworth Center on a $6.1 million investment in leadership training of public school officials across the region. This partnership recognizes the importance of investing in education leaders to ensure student success and community prosperity. Over the next 2 years, the goal is to strengthen the leadership skills of up to 100 principals, assistant principals, teachers, and district administrators, and build stronger talent development opportunities in the region's largest school systems. Scarborough Foundation will contribute $1.5 million to the effort, with the PSP contributing $4.6 million. We believe that investing in educational leadership is fundamental for securing a prosperous future in the Permian Basin, said Tracy Brentley, President and CEO of PSP. The Holdsworth Center has proven to be an exceptional partner, equipping public school leaders with the tools, skills, and top-tier training we need to elevate the quality of education in our region. Our continued partnership provides a valuable opportunity to ensure all students across the Permian Basin have access to the education they need to succeed. Fueled by regional growth, public schools in the Permian Basin are experiencing extreme increases in student populations and, unfortunately, have underperformed compared to other regions. Compounding the issue, schools in the area face a shortage in both teaching and leadership positions, further limiting educational opportunities for public school students. Because teachers, principals, assistant principals, and district administrators are educational first responders who provide learning opportunities and hope for our children and families, Scarborough Foundation is proud to partner with PSP, the Holdsworth Center, and the participating districts in this important initiative, said Grant Billingsley, President and CEO of Scarborough Foundation, Incorporated. Since its founding in 2017, the Holdsworth Center has served more than 1,370 educators in 50 Texas public school districts. After initial meetings with districts in the region, the Holdsworth Center invited 7 districts to be part of the final phase of leadership development based on interest and need. Schools within those districts will apply for Holdsworth's 2-year campus leadership program, which helps team up leaders, strengthens their leadership muscles, and learn new ways to tackle issues standing in the way of student success. The first cohort will include leadership teams from 24 schools and small districts, and learning from this cohort will influence what additional programs and opportunities will be offered to other Permian Basin schools and districts in the future. The area served will include southeastern New Mexico. They hope to work with up to 100 principals, assistant principals, teachers, and district administrators with the goal of equipping public school leaders with the tools, skills, and top-tier training we need to elevate the quality of education in our region. PSP says they are always on the lookout for opportunities to bring needed programs to the region. The opportunity arose to partner with the Scarborough Foundation and the Holdsworth Center, and they're excited it came to fruition. The program has a track record of success. Despite the challenges of the last 2 years, 84% of schools in the program made significant progress toward an ambitious student impact goal. The only way to achieve better results for students is to invest deeply in the dedicated educators who serve them, said Dr. Lindsay Wharton, president of the Holdsworth Center. We are grateful for PSP and the Scarborough for their vision and commitment to student success, and are eager to lift up and strengthen educators in the Permian Basin region. In addition to the Campus Leadership Program, 3 of the region's largest districts will participate in the Holdsworth Leadership Collaborative, a program designed to help district leaders build a strong bench of aspiring principals who are ready to step into school leadership positions when they arise. Wharton noted that great leaders draw out the best in people and mobilize them to achieve things they could not have imagined possible. Strong leadership is not a skill you are born with. It can be taught and honed through day-to-day practice. Holdsworth offers the kind of high-quality leadership learning and expertise that are uncommon in public education, yet essential to growing strong leaders who can deliver excellent results for students. That's backed by research showing that after teachers, principals have the greatest influence on student outcome, according to information from PSP. Report cites Parks Bell as best complex site. Multi-million-dollar sports issue on City Council agenda Tuesday. An island port, recycling, and a sports complex are all scheduled to be discussed this afternoon during Odessa City Council's work session. On February 14th, the Odessa City Council agreed to hire Synergy Global for $15,000 to conduct a sports complex feasibility study. Synergy met with citizens to get their input, but they also looked at demographics and socioeconomics, sports participation rates, competitors, the size and components of the city's courts and fields, and possible partnership and construction costs. In addition, more than 3,100 participants in a 10-question online survey as to their sports complex desires. Today, Synergy is expected to share their thoughts on what they discovered. According to materials already presented to the council, the company believes the Odessa region is a viable location for an indoor sports complex and complementary field complex that could host tournaments and events for the region. Most of those who participated in the online survey want the complex to be built in District 2 or District 4, and most want indoor basketball and volleyball courts over other amenities. Outdoor multi-sports fields came in third in terms of priorities. Synergy identified four potential sites for the complex: city-owned land near the Ector County Jail, private land at I-20 and Loop 338, private land behind Home Depot, known as the McKnight Family Ranch, and private land at the end of Faudry Road, known as the Parks Bell Ranch. The company has given the city a variety of options in terms of amenities, ranging in price from $19.2 million up to $41.5 million. The prices vary upon the number of indoor courts, whether the city includes a 200-meter track and ice rinks, and whether the city includes outdoor fields. The least expensive option would be a $9.2 million, 46,000-square-foot indoor facility with a gym that could accommodate four basketball courts or eight volleyball courts, multipurpose rooms, locker rooms, administrative offices, and a lobby. For an additional $10 million, there would be four 300-foot baseball, softball fields, and four 60-yard by 120-yard multi-sport flat fields, plus an indoor sports training complex, restrooms, concession stand, parking, and playground. The design would accommodate the addition of one to two ice rinks as part of a later phase. A $24.8 million option would be a 98,000-square-foot indoor facility with four basketball courts, eight volleyball courts, two ice rinks, a food court, skate rental area, and team locker rooms. The most expensive indoor complex at $31.5 million would include six basketball courts, 12 volleyball courts, a 200-meter temporary track, and 2 sheets of ice. According to Synergy, the city would see gross profits ranging from $1.2 million in the first year up to $2.5 million. The net profitability varies depending on the options. One of the options wouldn't see a net profit until after 5 years, but the 46,000-square-foot indoor facility would combine with the outdoor fields and would bring in an estimated $134,000 the first year and $739,000 by year 5. Synergy is recommending building a 70,000-square-foot indoor facility with 6 basketball courts, 12 volleyball courts at $14 million, and phasing in an indoor track, outdoor fields, and possibly ice rinks later on. The company believes the Bells Park Ranch is the best location. The preferred funding option would be a public-private partnership leaseback, giving the general resistance to a tax increase or issuance of a bond, Synergy said. Such an option, the city would provide some capital assistance, possibly tax incentives, infrastructure development, and cover some pre-development costs to a private developer partner. The private developer would pick the general contractor and subcontractors, and the city would lease back the facility in order to run parks and recreation programs. The next step would be for the city's Quality of Life Committee to continue analyzing the feasibility of moving forward, refine the plan, and begin conversations with developers. Final recommendations could be made by the city by July 1st, and if the city moves forward, the facility could be open August 2024. The city council is also expected to take up the topic of recycling again today. The council is considering eliminating its recycling program or scaling it back. The city currently disposes of roughly 100,000 tons of garbage a year and about 700 tons of recyclables. The Public Works Director, Tom Kerr, has said an unacceptable amount of the city's recyclables are contaminated and there isn't much of a market for recyclables nowadays. The city could pull its community collection sites and only make recycling available at the time machine. City staff has been working with BRI Recycling Services to figure out how much it would cost for BRI to continue picking up materials at the time machine and monitor for contamination. Also on the agenda is a discussion about inland ports. Last July, Odessa Mayor Javier Hoven and the Odessa Chamber of Commerce Economic Development Director Tom Mansky participated in discussions about the possible creation of a district transportation line between the Plaquemines, Port Harbor, and Terminal District south of New Orleans and Odessa. Today, the rest of the council is scheduled to hear more details about the possibility. The port, which was created in 1954, offers businesses a chance to send their products to other parts of the country using barges, railroads, and interstate highways. Back in July, Hoven and Mansky said two of the principals involved in the project have ties to Odessa and want Odessa to be one of those inland ports. The principals like that Odessa is already familiar with, oil, gas, and chemicals, Hoven said at the time. It would be like, oh my God, we can bring in all those costs. Get chemicals. They're already here. There's not a lot of re-education. There's not a lot of danger to the community. There's no more than we already are dealing with on a daily basis, Hoven said. During the council's regular meeting at 6 p.m., the council will discuss amending the master road plan to alter the future links of Don Avenue and 61st Street. Commissioners to hear from Con Ector Task Force. The Ector County Commissioners may hear from the Connector Task Force during their 10 a.m. meeting today. County Judge Dustin Fawcett said Monday, the item will likely be tabled, adding the county could fund some seed money to create an Ector County broadband office. We need to focus on applications with the state for a BOOT grant bringing online opportunities to Texas. The first round of funding grants are up to $5 million and we need to look at going after these. BOOT, Bringing Online Opportunities to Texas, seeks to bridge the digital divide for low-income Texans and others, Fawcett said. He said the office could be housed out of the Ector County Library and said the goal is helping students safely navigate the internet and with telemed and other issues. The court was slated to take any necessary action on the next steps for the Ector County Broadband Office to include a funding request. During his March 22nd media call, Ector County ISD Superintendent Scott Meary said the state broadband office has released the first round of money, a little over $300 million. It is available across the state for communities that are ready to have access to those dollars. We certainly are ready to do that. So the conversation we'll have next week with the county commission is the fact that we're ready for a local community to have access to those state funds, Mary said, March 22nd. There are other fundings available a bit further down the road, he added. In other business, commissioners will consider, discuss, and take any necessary action regarding the Gale Excel Adult High School Scholarships and to approve the county proposal letter. To consider, discuss, and take any necessary action to approve a proclamation declaring April 23rd through 29th as National Crime Victims' Rights Week and authorize the county judge, county commissioners, and county clerk to sign all documents associated with this agenda item. To consider, discuss, and take any necessary action on a replat of Lot 4, Block 30, Pleasant Farms, 3rd Filing Precinct Number 4, and authorize the county judge to sign all documents associated with this agenda item. To consider, discuss, and take any necessary action regarding the 1 gig internet upgrade for the West Side Annex, and authorize the county judge to sign all documents associated with this agenda item. To consider, discuss, and take any necessary action regarding specifications on the request for qualification for engineering services for the Ector County Utility District, ECUD, Water Distribution Project, and authorize the county judge and the ECUD Board General Manager to sign all documents associated with this agenda item. This item, Fawcett said, is a continuation of an agreement signed with ECUD several weeks ago. He said the commissioners in December, prior to Fawcett taking office, gave ECUD $10 million for a number of projects. Expanding the line in front of Buddy West Elementary School and improving access for larger parts of the West Odessa community, Fawcett said. The majority of the funding will go to getting pipe in the ground and improving connections. To consider, discuss, and take any necessary action to approve a change order to the agreement between Ector County and the HOK for architectural services for the new Juvenile Justice Center, and approve a budget amendment to 2020 Capital Projects Fund Professional Services 039-990-5307 from unreserved funds balance 039-3310 for $56,834 and authorize the county judge and county clerk to sign all documents associated with this agenda item. Fawcett said this item is simply to change order and that the deadline for bidders to submit proposals is March 31st. We extended the deadline last week as we wanted as many bids as possible for the Juvenile Justice Center. Fawcett said he is still hoping that Texas legislature will appropriate $40 million for the project. In recent weeks, Fawcett has indicated that rather than Ector County going it alone on the center, that he would like to partner with Midland County or even with a 17-county Permian Basin group for a larger and more effective facility. Maybe all counties could put in money and be a part of exploring options on how to best leverage funding for the entire Permian Basin, he said. Fawcett said private stakeholders have expressed some interest in the project, but that the proposed $40 million in state money could make it a reality. It's a lot to think about. We want something that best serves law enforcement and also the families of those juveniles that will keep them closer to home. To consider, discuss, and take any necessary action to approve an interlocal agreement for the exchange of properties with ECISD, and to approve an order exempting the purchase of land and authorize the county judge and county clerk to sign all documents associated with this agenda item. Fawcett said this item deals with Ector County owning what is essentially part of a West Odessa school's playground. He said ECISD and the county will merely swap properties as ECISD owns a nearby playa and ECISD will get the playground and the county will get the playa, which can be used for drainage. The item simply cleans up property ownership that has been incorrect. To consider, discuss, and take any necessary action regarding the architectural services agreement with Park Hill for the design and building oversight of the county library and authorize the county judge, county auditor, and county clerk to sign all documents associated with this agenda item. Fawcett said the goal with the library and moving forward for the county is to come up with an Ector County-wide asset plan. We don't live in a silo and we need to see the whole picture and decide where we want to put buildings and how they will best serve Ector County residents. He also detailed that there is a need to make the best use of county property and mentioned the old Boy Scout building near the courthouse. He said there is talk of what could be that building be used for. It could be a city visitor center or a restaurant or a fire museum. There are so many things it could be. Like all county buildings, he said, the commissioners need to decide what would be the best use of the facility. To consider, discuss, and take any necessary action regarding the Ector County Monthly Treasurer's Report for December 2022, January 2023, and February 2023, and authorize the county judge and county commissioners to sign all documents associated with this agenda item. In addition, requesting that the reports be archived with the official minutes of the meeting. To consider, discuss, and take any necessary action to approve payment of a FY 2022 invoice to the Ivy Group in regard to the Commissioner's Court presentation from June 28, 2023. To consider, discuss, and take any necessary action to approve a line item transfer to General Fund Library Professional Dues Fees 001-690-5302 from Periodicals 001-690-5200 for $1,000 and authorize the county judge and county clerk to sign all documents associated with this agenda item. To consider, discuss, and take any necessary action to approve a budget amendment to General Fund Library New Books 001-690-5201 for $1,706 to subscriptions. 001-690-5207 for $1,100 and two donated revenues. 001 4171 for $2,806, and authorize the county judge and county clerk to sign all documents associated with this agenda item. To consider, discuss, and take any necessary action to approve a budget amendment to general funds, Justice of the Peace, Precinct 3, Departmental Furniture and Equipment, 001-203-5191 for unreserved funds balance, 001-3310 for $5,000, and authorize the county judge and county clerk to sign all documents associated with this agenda item. To consider, discuss, and take any necessary action to approve a budget amendment to General Fund, Justice of the Peace, Precinct 4, Departmental Furniture and Equipment, 001-204-5199 from Unreserved Fund Balance, 001-3310 for $2,500, and authorize the county judge and county clerk to sign all documents associated with this agenda item. To consider, discuss, and take any necessary action to approve a line item transfer to Airport Fund, Educational Travel, 04-2870-5161 from Electricity, 042-870-5352 for $2,600, and authorize the county judge and county clerk to sign all documents associated with this agenda item. Board to consider hires for top spots. The Ector County ISD Board of Trustees will consider the hiring of a principal for Crockett Middle School, an executive director of human resources, and executive director of talent development at their meeting set for 6 p.m. today in the first floor boardroom of the administrative building, 802 North Sam Houston Avenue. The Executive Director of Human Resources, Stacy Ashley, is now the Vice President of Human Resources at Medical Center Hospital. Ashley Osborne, who was Executive Director of Talent Development, is now Associate Superintendent for Teaching and Learning at Midland ISD. Maribel Aranda was the principal at Crockett Middle School, will be Director of Administrative Services. The board also will host a public hearing on an amendment number 2 to agreement for limitation on appraised value between the district and Acero Texas 1 LLC in a January 23rd Odessa American article. It detailed Acero Incorporated has switched gears from using natural gas to make clean gasoline to powering airplanes from the same source. Acero Chief Operating Officer Hal Balkanite said that the $7 million to $10 million plant will still be at the oil-filled ghost town of Penwell, 15 miles west of Odessa off I-20. The meeting will also include the introduction of the UIL State Qualifier, Odessa High School, Mariachi Bronco, presentation of the Odessa Collegiate Academy Academic Decathlon State Qualifier, and the announcement of Regional Spelling Bee winner. Trustees will also consider approving the election of uncontested school board candidate Don Miller, Position 1, and Tammy Hawkins, Position 6. The election is May 6th. Donna Smith, Position 3, and Dennis Jones, Position 7, are up for re-election and facing competition. Wayne Woodall is running for Position 3, and Robert Thayer and John Dietz Rabinalt are going for Position 7.